A new state-of-the-art active shooter training facility is eventually coming to Bristol, Connecticut. It would be the first of its kind in New England, and it's really no coincidence that the location is in Bristol. I want to talk to a couple of the, I call them the brain children of this idea, including Officer Alec Iorato of the Bristol Police Department, as well as Bristol Fire Chief Richard Hart. And I know Officer Jacobs is also the third person who's really kind of worked on this concept with both of you. But I want to thank you both for being in studio and talking about this. We really appreciate it. How are you?
Yeah, great. Good.
Thank you.
Good. Yeah, thank you.
I got to be honest. Officer Iorato, I have waited to talk to you for so long. I want to personally thank you, and my listeners want to thank you, obviously, for your heroic actions in October of 2022, and sorry for, obviously, your loss, the department's loss. I would imagine that has a lot to do with where this concept came from.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was probably a year afterwards where I ended up starting to have a conversation with Chief Hart here. About things that we could do in order to better our officers, to better our firefighters. And you know, the wheels were just turning, and we were kind of just adding one thing to the next thing, to the next thing. And you know, we ended up with an active shooter center with a indoor firing range and then a CPAT testing center for the fire department. And that was kind of our whole thing, where we were thinking, you know, this is where we could really train people and get people up to a higher level.
And I love the aspect of it not just being for police, but also for fire. Because even the testing, I know, Chief, when I've talked to Bridgeport's chief for their fire department, they have a small facility for that type of testing. But overall, my understanding is there's only a couple of places where you can even get that done as well. So to incorporate the fire, I would think, is a big deal, too.
Yeah, so I had conversations with the training division up at the Fire Academy, and the obstacles that they were facing was the facility in Meriden that they run the testing at is weather-dependent. It's an exterior operation, and there are certain parameters as far as weather, temperature, and humidity that they have to abide by. So I started thinking about building a facility for that testing service in Bristol. And one of my officers, who's friends with Alec, said, hey, ironically, at a Patriots football game, we started the conversation. And we've been working on it ever since, and that's been 3 years, I think.
Yeah, just about 3 years.
And it kind of went to the back burner, and things with the state have kind of loosened up a little bit. We've been having conversations with the commissioner regarding the combined facility, and it's been very well received with whomever we've talked to, be it state legislators, be it we've had conversations with the comptroller, Sean Scanlon, and it's the ball is really rolling. And this would be an indoor facility for candidate physical agility testing. 24/7, we'd be drawing, again, for the testing services from all of New England, obviously all of Connecticut.
Yeah.
So it's been a very good relationship.
It's really neat, and I think, you know, to your point, Chief, that you're going to probably see not just Connecticut departments for fire and police here, but I would think, you know, obviously all of New England and even the tri-state area, I would think would want to use these, because I've never heard of a facility like this in our area. I know the quote of it being the first in New England, I believe, came from Congressman Larson, but I've not heard of even having, you know, just any of these types of facility all in one, these opportunities for police and fire. I mean, is that correct?
Yeah. The only one that we know of is currently in Middletown, where there's like an indoor area to do some room clearing, things like that, and then an outdoor range. But once again, it's an outdoor range, right? You have to, you know, account for the weather, you know, the temperature, the rain, and then any of the noise pollution from shooting outside. They ended up putting that range in and immediately started getting complaints from citizens. And that's what we want to avoid. We want to have everything inside. We want to reduce the amount of noise pollution. We want to be able to train at any point and under any lighting conditions as well. Because what ends up happening is the statistics are very interesting, and I'll probably get them a little bit wrong, but it's somewhere over 70% of law enforcement shootings are in the dark or in low light.
Mm.
So why don't we train in those conditions, right? Because if that's what we're going to experience and that's where we're seeing the statistics are for law enforcement shootings, we should be training our people in those conditions.
It's ironic because you guys had mentioned that this had been sort of an idea for about 3 years. Was it after what happened?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
So because I believe if I remember the story correctly, Officer Iorato, did you guys do training that morning?
We did. We did an active shooter training that morning at 8 a.m. And, you know, it was for all of our patrolmen. As a SWAT team, as an instructor, we were all brought in order to kind of role play or to be, you know, any safety personnel or just overseeing kind of the operations of what they were doing. And it was very weird to be a role player in a scenario like that, where, you know, I had to simulate a gunshot wound to my leg during one of the scenarios, and my partner who was with me as another role player was told to, hey, take this tourniquet, put this tourniquet on your buddy's leg over there. That's Kevin Monahan. He's the same one that put a tourniquet on me in real life 11 hours later.
Wow.
And, you know, that's why we really bring that up a lot, because we want people to understand that, you know, every rep that you take in training, that can be the rep that's going to matter. Mm-hmm. That you're going to need that in 10 minutes, in, you know, 5 days, whatever the case may be, you might need that. So train to, you know, your fullest potential and, you know, rep things out, because you don't know what's going to happen.
Well, and to your point as well, not every situation is going to look the same for police or for fire. You know, you're not always going to be, you know, even a school. So you'll hear about these simulations where they go into schools and they will do kind of a mock situation. But every school layout is different. Every fire situation is going to be different, whatever the, you know, whatever the complex looks like, if it's a home, if it's a duplex, whatever apartment complex. So how does this facility sort of lay out? What does it look like? And how does it speak to the things you're talking about, which is there are so many different scenarios, and to kind of be more well-versed and prepared for them?
Yeah. So on the active shooter side of this facility, the second and third floors above the CPAT center are going to be our space in order to do room clearing, is what we generally call it. So it's the plans are for it to be a modular space so that you can move walls, move doors, create different avenues to go down, where every single time you go into it, it's different. And
wow, how easy is that to do? That sounds like almost like an escape room, like, yeah, where they'll change the rooms up. And I'm like, how do you even do that? Are there companies that will kind of do, okay, you're like, yeah, no, we got this. We already got this, Melissa. Move on. I just think that's fascinating. That's incredible.
It's pretty intense. And it's something that we generally don't have in law enforcement, which is crazy to me, because we end up using a lot of venues that are either abandoned or, you know, they're trying to renovate them or something like that. So we're using a lot of commercial structures in order to train. And that's not what we see most of the time. Most of the time we're in, you know, two family homes, three family homes, you know, little capes. We're in, you know, more confined spaces. So why don't we have a facility where it's modular, where we can make it very similar to what we're going to experience, whether, you know, we're doing an active shooter training for, you know, for schools, public places, supermarkets, things like that. You know, we can widen the hallways. We could create bigger open spaces, right? Things to simulate what we're training for.
Yeah. And then for as far as the kind of the training, another thing I was thinking of with fire is one of the issues I hear, especially for volunteer, is that we don't have the numbers that we would like to get more people recruited and retained. Do you feel like having facilities dedicated to that type of training and to, even before they become firefighters would help with that?
Yeah. So in to Alex's point regarding muscle memory, we train to muscle memory just so everything becomes second nature. But if you have a static environment, that also creates muscle memory so that you know there's going to be a door 10 feet down to the right. So I know something may be in there or to the left or however it may be. But one of the impetuses for me when I became chief of the department was I wanted to recruit more women and minorities into the fire service because I really, truly feel it's important that we look like the community we serve.
Mm.
And unfortunately, with the fire service, it's 90% white male. And to change that, this would be a great avenue to get kids at the high school level mm-hmm. to come in because it is a rather intensive testing process.
Yeah.
Where there's a weight room where they can work out, get physically fit, which has its benefits on the side, but also be able to practice taking the test. So if they do aspire to be a firefighter or even a police officer, they can train to the position so that they can do the test before they actually do the test so that we can ensure success. So we're working with the Board of Ed to and the superintendent to really, we're taking baby steps now. And once this gets built, and I may not see it, I may not be there, but it will be built and it will develop a program where we can recruit kids from Bristol to go into law enforcement or
into the fire service. I think that's a really big deal. And Chief Hart, can you tell us maybe a little bit more of what this could do specifically for the fire service? I know we're talking a lot about active shooter, which is important, but maybe especially like the aftermath of a situation, what would this facility do for firefighters and first responders?
Like I mentioned before, having SWAT medics trained with the PD, last year we did interagency training with the PD with active shooter, and providing the treatment and triage of victims. And that's a first for the fire department. So it would really, like we mentioned off air, it would be a struggle to do it in a live situation. So if we could train with the PD to assist on the EMS side of the process. But also, with the facility, we can use it for large area searches, room searches. We can use the building at such a height. We can offer up high-angle rope technician classes. We want to put in confined space props, so we can do those technician-level classes in conjunction with the fire academy. So really building it out as a, for lack of a better term, a satellite office of the Connecticut Fire Academy in Windsor Locks, where we could do the technical rescue disciplines at this facility, where they don't have that capability at in Windsor Locks. So it truly would be a cohabitation between police and fire.
And actually, I think you had mentioned it before, Alec, that you could do kind of personnel rescue as well. And I was thinking about, I know in Trumbull, they are trying to build a facility that does a little, like a small area where there's like water, but water retrieval rescues. Is that something that can be incorporated in this facility, or probably not, because you're talking all indoor?
Yeah, so what we could do is indoor rescues, right? If a firefighter or police officer goes down in a structure, we can do rescues that way. And we could shut lights off, and we could work, with handheld lights, weapon lights, things like that. Training in the environment that we generally deal with, we could create basically any type of scenario in these. And I think that's one of the coolest things is the active shooter center. It's not just for law enforcement, right? We talk about an active shooter in reality going into a public place and doing harm to civilians. What is ultimately going to happen is that there are going to be people that are injured. And then when the shooting is done, when the bad guy is either, in custody, dead, or, whatever, those people are going to have to get to some sort of treatment. And how are we going to do that? Right? We don't have enough hands just as police officers to do all of these different things. And that's why we rely on firefighters, on EMS personnel, in order to move those people out from that warm zone or the hot zone, and then into an area where we could have that casualty collection point, do some triage, get people to a higher level of care if necessary. So, you know, it's definitely a collaborative effort, you know, in an incident like that. And I think that if we have the facility, if we have a training location where we can do these things, you know, anything's possible.
So we are chatting with Bristol Police Officer Alec Iorato and Bristol Fire Chief Richard Hart, and we're discussing this new active shooter facility that will be coming to Bristol. As you mentioned before, Chief, I don't know when. We don't, because we have to find a place first, right? But we're getting the funding. We seem to have the backing for this idea, right? We're looking good.
Yeah, we have two pieces of property in Bristol. One of the important needs is to have it centrally located near hotel facilities as well as restaurants.
Sure.
Because people coming in may want to grab lunch or whatever. It'll be, you know, if they're there for a day long. But also one of the important things is to have it on a mass transit route. So there is a bus route that goes by in the area. So it's a short walk to where the facility will be. We do have an unbelievable support from the Bristol City Council and Board of Finance. They think it's a great idea. They've already committed some money to design and land acquisition. So we hopefully will have a piece of property within, you know, 3 or 4 months that we can call home and put a stake in the ground and say this is where it's going to be and move to the construction phase.
Yeah. Well, I hope it's here before you're like, I don't know if I'll see it. No, I hope you see it. You should see it.
Well,
you should
totally see it.
Yeah, you can drive down. Right?
Yeah,
you're close enough. You should go see it. No, but see, I mean, I would love to see it sooner rather than later. I think it, for so many reasons. I didn't even think of the education, you know, bringing the next generation into to be around that and the mentorship and all that. Like, that's a whole other component to this, which makes it, I think, a very brilliant idea. And something that we were talking about off the air, I believe, Officer Iorato, you had mentioned it before, was that if a police department, for example, wanted to go, you know, to there was a either a range or a facility that's in New Hampshire, what we're talking about this, but, you know, a snippet of what would be part of this. That's something that you'd have to make that trek up. Like, nobody's, you know, that's not part of your contract, if you will, as a police officer or a firefighter. Right. I mean, this is something that. You have to kind of actively want to go and get more of that training. And we just don't have those opportunities as readily available in Connecticut right now.
Yeah. When it comes down to law enforcement facilities, it's difficult. It's really tough in order to find the places in order to send our people. I'm in our training division now. So it's very apparent that it's difficult in order to find the trainings and the locations. And most of these trainings are hours away. So we're sending people to these specialized trainings that are 4 hours away. You're paying for travel, the hotel, you know, food, all of these things. And it's just for one person to go to the specialized training out of 122 or 124 Bristol police officers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's not worthwhile, basically. So having a facility that's close to home where we can send not just, you know, our people, but Southington, Cheshire, Plymouth, Plainville, Farmington, right? Have all of those local towns involved and bringing them in. We want this to be a facility that's utilized 365 days out of the year.
Oh, I think it will be. I think you'll get people as far as Greenwich. I mean, and then even obviously passing into, you know, New York, New Jersey, as we mentioned, and I would think northern states. I mean, I just think it's so prevalent. I mean, and this is not even putting politics into it, but, you know, guns are readily available. Unfortunately, shootings happen. And I think we have to be able to adjust to whatever that looks like. I mean, do you ever think about, you know, obviously the irony of that day and the fact that you had done training 12 hours prior, you know, what this type of training would do for so many? I mean, I think departments, obviously, you know, state police, what have you, but what it would do for public safety in general. Because to your points, this is not really something like these types of facilities don't really exist in, I would say, mass capacity across the country even. So having something like this, you know, could you imagine? you know, yeah, the impact.
Yeah, generally, the only times that we've seen a facility like this are sheriff's offices, generally down south, very large departments that have the ability to build a facility because they need to, because they have thousands of employees. You know, we don't have anything like that. And ultimately, what's going to end up happening is on your worst day, you're going to call 911 and you're going to expect the best of the best to show up. So providing them with a facility, a location to train, to do the hard things, the hard skills over and over and over again, preparing them for that call that's going to happen every single day. On our way down here, we were just listening to the radio and there were some calls coming in. It never ends. So right. Train our people so that they're always ready.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be watching this very closely, obviously. Is there anything that we always like to do, call to action? So my listeners, we have very active listeners on WICC. Is there anything they can do? It seems like Connecticut lawmakers are backing this. They like the idea of it. But is there anything you guys need in order for this to move forward sooner rather than later?
It'd be great if we had their callers call their state legislator and say, this is a good project. This is a worthwhile investment in public safety for the state of Connecticut, not just Bristol. I thought of this when you were talking about when Alex said recruitment and retention. It just illustrates that Bristol's investing in their officers and in their firefighters, that this facility being built for them and the state of Connecticut shows that commitment to the public safety community. So I think if they did that, that would be a big help, because we are looking for help from the state as far as bonding is concerned to offset some of the costs. But
have you guys got, I'm just curious, as you were talking about this, Chief, have you heard from a lot of Connecticut fire and police departments who love this idea? Because I feel like, you know, not just lawmakers, but to me, I live in Milford and I love our police department. I love our fire department. But I would even write to them and be like, hey, if you guys think you'd use this facility, you should, you know, like, pledge your support. I don't know if you guys already have that. I would imagine you may, but have you heard a lot of support on this?
Yes. Verbally, the emails that we've gotten, the text messages, the phone calls, whatever it is, it's just flowing in. People are supporting it. People want it, especially the people at the lower level that get all the trainings. They're texting us, calling us, and they're like, get this thing moving,
right.
Get it built, because we want to be able to train, you know, at a state-of-the-art facility.
Mm.
You know, so it's, yeah, we're getting the support. It's we need true support when it comes down to, you know, getting those funds.
Yeah.
Is we need the
Give me the property, give me the money.
Yep. We need the chiefs from, you know, the surrounding area, from the state to back it. We need, you know, the legislators to back it. We need all of these things to all come about, but I think that we're going down the right path.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thank you both for even having this idea, putting it forward, seeing some movement. Definitely keep me posted, and we'll do our part, obviously, in advocating for it as well. Thank you both also for your service. We really appreciate it.
Yeah,
thank you. Thank you very much.